Today we're doing a film analysis on Halloween 3, Season of the Witch. We're going to cover the cast, lots of fun facts, and the original vision for this entire Halloween movie series. Then we're going to walk through the whole film and discussion about occult connections to Bohemian Grove, Stonehenge. We'll talk about the world's second worst doctor, only behind Dr. Loomis himself. Samhain, blood sacrifices, Irish druidic occultists, and a fun little Twin Peaks crossover conspiracy I cooked up in the conclusion. My name is Isaac Weishaupt, and I've been covering occult symbolism in film since 2011, and you're listening to the Occult Symbolism and Pop Culture Podcast. Now, as you know, these film analyses, I always start out and I say, should you watch this movie before I spoil the plot? I mean, the movie's damn 40 years old at this point. I don't know who hasn't seen this. If you're a horror fan, you've already seen it, all right? And if you're a horror fan and you haven't seen it, yes, you gotta watch it. I don't know what you're doing. This was John Carpenter's original vision, and Deborah Hill, of course, for the entire Halloween series, an anthology of different stories every year, which in hindsight I think would have been a much better decision, but hey, that's just me. Now, if you don't like horror movies, if you don't like 80s films, then I don't know, it's fine. To be honest, if I take my personal biases and nostalgia out of it, it's not that great of a movie, but it's one of my all-time favorites. I ranked it really high. Last year or the year before, I went through every Halloween movie and I ranked them on my Letterbox at Isaac Weishaupt. Like and subscribe. And links are always in the show notes. And I ranked Halloween 3 Season of the Witch really high. If I'm through my recollection of the Halloween series, the original 1978, it's the GOAT. It's the best one by far. And I thought Rob Zombie's Halloween 2 was the second best Halloween movie in the whole series, the whole franchise. And then I put Halloween 3 Season of the Witch at number 3. And if you want to see the rest of them, go check that out on my Letterboxd. And I've got the Halloween 3 mask tattooed on my leg, all three of them. That's right. I'm very, I love the movie. So, I don't know. Take from that what you will. It's only 99 minutes, so they get it done in the right amount of time. Now let's talk about who's in this movie. The main character is Dr. Dan Challis, played by Tom Atkins, a legend from Pittsburgh, PA. His wiki says he was going to work the steel mill with Dad, but joined the Navy and saw how good the officers had it and said, man, I gotta get me some college in. Same journey I had. I was going to work a nice blue-collar lifestyle in PA, joined the military. I said, man, these officers got it made. What the hell am I doing? I got to get to college. And if you haven't heard my life story, I've got an episode I did just a few weeks ago called Who is Isaac Weishaupt? I'll put a link in the show notes. It explains it all if you got 3 hours. And I'm going to do a continuation part 2 in November of 2024, but that's only for the supporters. Sorry, free feed losers, you're losing again. You're losing every month. I'm going to answer, there's like 70 questions on my Patreon of people that wanted more information, and I'm going to answer all of them. Now, Tom Atkins, he worked with John Carpenter on The Fog, a great movie. Escape from New York. He was also in Maniac Cop. He was in Creepshow. All great movies. And he was married one time to Garn Stevens. She plays the role of Marge in this movie. Tell him Large Marge sent you. And she stays, ironically, in the film, in the motel, right next to Dr. Dan and Ellie. Ironically. We'll cover that later. Some things go down in the motel room, as you know. And his poor wife had to listen to the whole thing. Speaking of Ellie, she was played by Stacey Nelkin. Apparently, she's got a YouTube channel as a relationship expert and therapist. And if you didn't read my email newsletter or my social medias, my YouTube got torched again. I fell for it again. They torched me at the height in 2017 and I thought I could rebuild. I was getting there and boom, there it goes. I don't know what the future looks like for these videos of me. It takes forever to do them. And at this point, the only way to watch them is on the tier 2 for Patreon or VIP section. I don't know what to do. I might pull a plug on the video thing entirely unless enough people petition and like, no, I love it. We'll see. I'm going to read you from the Wikipedia something interesting about Stacy. According to Stacy Nelken, Woody Allen's film Manhattan was based on her romantic relationship with the director, whom she met when she was 16 on the set of Annie Hall. Her bit part in that film ended up being cut, and their relationship began when she was 17 years old and was a student at New York's, Stuyvesant High School, and Allen was 42. Allen said that they dated for a time, but that Nelken was not underage. Oh, dear. I watched Annie Hall in college, ironically. We just talked about college. I watched it in a film studies class. I thought it was boring. I think Woody Allen's a creep anyway, so who cares? Now, what's really interesting is that Stacy Nelken was married to Barry Bostwick. Oh, Brad. From Rocky Horror Picture Show. We did a Rocky Horror Picture Show episode on this pod. Every Halloween, I try to do a Halloween-type theme movie. I did Rocky Horror, and I'm a huge Rocky Horror fan. I go every year. And I did a show discussing the film, I think, a bunch of years back when I wrote the book about Rocky Horror Picture Show, Occult Symbolism. And then I did a show about shock treatment, I think. I'm trying to think. Anyway, if you're into Rocky Horror, check my archives. Look for October of every year. I do Halloween stuff. Then we've got Dan O'Hurley as Connell Cochran. He's authentically Irish, which is the role in the film. And you already know why we're talking about this legend. He plays Andrew Packard in the beloved Twin Peaks. That's right. He was also in The Last Starfighter, and he was in RoboCop with, you know who, Ray Wise, a.k.a. Leland Palmer, and Miguel Ferreira, a.k.a. Albert, FBI Special Agent Albert. But his whole family, full of go-getters, the brother's a director, the son's an actor. His son actually played Preston King in Twin Peaks, the officer on the Royal Canadian Mounted Police in Season 2, and so on. He's dead. Died in 2005 at age 85. Pretty good run. He did a ton of movies, a ton of work. We're going to come back to him a little bit later. Obviously, in the conclusion, we're going to talk about this crossover Twin Peaks conspiracy I cooked up. Just for fun. Nancy Kies, a.k.a. Nancy Loomis, plays Dr. Dan's ex-wife. And she worked with John Carpenter a bunch, Assault on Precinct 13, The Fog, Halloween 1, Halloween 2, Halloween 3. She played Laurie Strode's friend in Halloween 1 and 2, Annie Brackett. Then we've got Dick Warlock, easily the coolest name in the whole cast. He plays and one of the many android assassins. He was actually Michael Myers in Halloween 2. And he did a lot of stunts. Kurt Russell's stunt double for 25 years. Did gay stunts for Little Richard. Was that Dave Chappelle? He did tons of stunts. Running Man, Spaceballs, The Abyss, Pumpkinhead, Big Trouble in Little China, The Thing, Friday the 13th, Jaws, Spider-Man, Casino. He's done it all. And then finally, the director, Tommy Lee Wallace. He also directed the 1990 TV miniseries for Stephen King's It, which is fantastic. He was once married to Nancy Kies, a.k.a. Nancy Loomis. See? Isn't that fun? Now, this movie got made, I don't know what's going on with it. A lot of people say, well, this is the one movie without Michael Myers, and it sucks. And I disagree wholeheartedly. I think if you honestly sit down and watch all the Halloweens back to back to back, there's tons of them. Most of them are terrible. Even the sequel, Halloween 2, sucks. It's true. And I know it's very controversial. The Rob Zombie Halloweens are pretty good, I thought. But Halloween 3 is great. John Carpenter and Deborah Hill said they would only do this movie. They would only do a Halloween movie if Michael Myers was not in it. Okay. And the funding came from the same, Mustafa Akkad and Irwin Yablans. And we talked about Mustafa Akkad, I believe, in my Halloween 1978 film analysis. If you look at October of 2022, I talked about an alien theory about Michael Myers and the symbolism of Halloween 1978. If you want more on that. Now, what's interesting is that a man named Nigel Neal wrote the screenplay for Halloween 3, and John Carpenter was obsessed with Nigel Neal, loved him, and he loved the Quatermass series, which is what gave us The Thing. If you recall, I talked about all these topics in my second Alien book, Aliens, UFOs, and the Occult, User Illusion 2, if you want more on that. Because John Carpenter wrote the screenplay for Prince of Darkness under an alias, Martin Quatermass. You know, he's obsessed. So Nigel Neal writes a screenplay, but then they add a bunch of gore, and Nigel Neal's like, go ahead and take my name off the credits, please. Because he didn't want it to look like that. So Tommy Lee Wallace ends up having to rewrite some of it, and you get the final product. Also, final fun fact, the subtitle Season of the Witch actually comes from George Romero's second film from 1972, Season of the Witch. George Romero, of course, gave us Night of the Living Dead. Okay, here we go. Plot spoilers coming. You've been warned. Let's get into it. Opening credits start, and we get the classic 80s synthy digital display computer screen graphic forming a pumpkin. And then we're given some cues. It says we're in Northern California, and it's Saturday, October 23rd. Now, you also know what else is in Northern California? Bohemian Grove, where the elites gather every year to do the big ritual sacrifice, allegedly, to the owl god of Minerva. But yeah, the Bohemian Grove is located in Northern California as well, near Santa Rosa, which... later, you're going to hear that this film basically takes place in a town called Santa Mira, which was a fictional town in Northern California, which was also in Invasion of the Body Snatchers. Now, to start, the events on the 23rd is also curious because of Discordianism, the 23 enigma, the law of fives, everything happens in fives, 2 plus 3 equals 5, that kind of thing. But if you look it up, the year is 1982, the year that this movie was released. And we see a man running away from a car, and he's hiding in an auto shop. You can see he's got this orange pumpkin mask in his pocket. And a dude, a couple dudes in suits are tailing him in a car. And one of the dudes from the car, one of the suits, catches up to him, puts him in full mount UFC, and he's choking him out. But, oh boy, he's smart. He pulls a car chock out and gets the car to roll forward and crush the suit that's full mounted him. Genius move. So the other suit gets out of the car, starts stalking, but oh boy gets away. An hour later, we're now at a gas station, and the news is playing an ominous little piece about a missing guide stone, and then it cuts to the commercial, which is the same commercial we're going to hear throughout the whole movie, about Silver Shamrock and these Halloween masks. Take a listen.
Leaving British authorities still baffled and without any substantial clues 9 months after the theft. The blue stone was one of 19, believed to represent the 19-year cycle of the moon. It weighs more than 5 tons, making its disappearance a mystery indeed. Derek Smith at Stonehenge.
When we come back, Trina will be here to tell you what you can do about junk mail. Stay with us.
In 4 days to Halloween, Halloween, Halloween. In 4 days to Halloween, Silver Shamrock. In 4 days to Halloween, Halloween, Halloween. In 4 days to Halloween, Silver Shamrock.
Yes, kids, you too can own one of the big Halloween three. That's right, three horrific masks to choose from. They're fun, they're frightening, and they glow in the dark.
All right, so let's tackle this idea about Stonehenge, and we're going to come back later. Stonehenge, a megalithic structure in England, a circle of stones built astronomically aligned to the solstices. Thousands of years ago, lots of debate on who, when, and why these were built. One thing we do know is that it tracks celestial bodies like the sun and its movement. And this takes us back to the foundations and the origins of the occult. And it's all about astrology. It's all about the planetary movements, as above, so below, the Hermetic axiom. All right. That's the foundation of all occult sciences, is coordinating events and rituals based upon the movement and location of the planetary bodies. We're going to come back to this in the conclusion when we discuss this Twin Peaks theory. And I know I'm hyping up this Twin Peaks theory. Don't get too excited. It's just for fun. But I do think it's interesting. Stonehenge also very similar to the Georgia Guidestones. I did a show about that in March of 24. If you want more on that. And I'll put the links in the show notes to the other episodes that I'm mentioning in case you haven't heard them. So anyway, old boy gets to this gas station, and the attendant, he's watching TV, but then the power cuts out. Attendant's like, man, what's going on with the power? He goes to investigate it. Here comes dude running up with a mask, and he's like, oh, they're coming. And he, like, dies with the mask in his hands. So then we cut to the hospital, or not the hospital. We cut to Dr. Dan, played by Tom Atkins. He shows up to his ex-wife's house to pick up the kids. He's got some gifts, some janky, whack, plastic Halloween mask. Because that's how it was back in the 80s. At best, you got a plastic mask. Not the silver shamrock masks that Mom got them. Mom knows better. So we're already under the impression this guy's like a kind of a screw up as a dad. And he gets there and his beeper goes off, his work beeper. So he calls the hospital and they basically are like, hey, there's this dude running around with a mask who like dropped unconscious at a gas station. And this attendant dropped him off, a good Samaritan. And he's like, oh man, I got to go. So he tells his ex-wife, he's like, sorry, I'm not picking up these dumb kids. I'm going to the hospital. I got to go to work. So he goes to work. Old dude's freaking out. He's not dead, turns out. And Dr. Dan is like, you know, pump his ass full of Thorazine. Then one of the suits shows up to the hospital. He's not very happy about how this all turned out. Dr. Dan, he's flirting with Nurse Agnes, slapping her on the butt, you know, just like how doctors behaved in the 80s. And meanwhile, well, one of the suits, he walks down the hall towards old Thorazine brain here. And, you know, nobody notices. Dr. Dan, he's taking a little nap on the doctor's couch. No pillow, like a psychopath. And I used to clean hospitals back in the day. And, man, there was one doctor who used to hang out in the little ER. They would have like a little doctor's sleepy lounge. He was a mess. He was like kind of a slob, kind of gross. Anyway, Dr. Dan, he's going to lay down and take a little nap. But the suit guy, he gloves up, heads to room 13 where old boy's still clutching his little mask. He covers dude's mouth so no one can hear him scream, lifts his hand like he's going to punch him in the face, but he doesn't punch him. He finger bangs this dude's eyeballs and it kills him somehow. Very strange. Then the nurse walks in. She sees the carnage. She's screaming. Dr. Dan wakes up, chases the suit guy out to the car, but he sees dude sitting in the car, douses himself in gasoline, and lights himself on fire, and the whole car blows up immediately. What is going on in this town? So Dr. Dan calls his wife. She's still tripping because she's like, you're supposed to take these dumb kids. And he's like, I'm not taking those kids. And this is one of my favorite scenes, because in the background, you'll see a fireman and a policeman sort of pretending like they're talking. And the fireman's prop hat is so bad. There's like some kind of arts and crafts FD on a fake little velvety badge, and it's like flopping around on the hat. It's hard to explain. But it's almost like they just stapled this thing to the hat, and they're like, here, now you're a fireman. So now it's Sunday the 24th. Cars smoldering in the parking lot. They didn't take that away yet. Didn't even police tape it. In walks the dead guy's hot daughter. Dr. Dan, he's very interested in helping out now. She IDs her father. The sheriff sends her on her way. But Dr. Dan feels like something's up with this whole thing. Because on his way out of the hospital to finally leave his shift, he sees hot daughter crying. But he kind of looks at her. She looks at him. And then he just keeps walking. Now we're 3 days later. It's now Wednesday, the 27th. They're still trying to figure out what happened. The sheriff thinks that the guy was killed in some kind of drug-related thing. Dr. Dan thinks there's something else going on. He's calling the coroner to, try to investigate, to figure out what's going on. And he apparently was shtupping the coroner, too. You know? Dr. Dan gets around. No wonder he's divorced. Couldn't keep it in his pants. 2 days later, Friday the 29th. Man, we're zooming through the days. Just like that. Dr. Dan's in the bar. They're playing cartoons, which is strange for a bar. So he tells the bartender to change it. And when the bartender changes it, it goes to a channel that's playing a trailer for Halloween, the movie. Take a listen.
Hey, Charlie, can we have another station?
You got it.
The Immortal Classic, followed by the big giveaway at 9, brought to you by...
Come on.
What's the matter? Don't you have any Halloween spirit?
No.
So they plan. So the Halloween's being referenced. It's a very meta thing. And then we get another Silver Shamrock commercial. And boom, who walks in the bar? Hot daughter walks in. Find out her name is Ellie. And what's funny is she tells Dr. Dan, she's like, Dr. Dan's like, how'd you find me at the bar? And she's like, I just went and asked around the hospital. They said you'd be here. It's like, how did they know the doctor was going to be drinking at the bar during the middle of the day? They knew. They know Dr. Dan. Two things Dr. Dan loves, and that's booze, and you know what the other one is. I don't need to say it out loud. So Dr. Dan goes to Ellie's dad's funeral, or she did go to Ellie's dad's funeral, and she was stopping by to say thanks, all right? They have a conversation, and they're like trying to wonder how her dad really died, because nobody knows yet. And apparently dad told her, they're going to kill us all, which made me think of me. The phrase I said so many years ago that's unfortunately becoming more true by the day. These nerds are going to kill us. So is he saying these nerds are going to kill us? Well, by the end of the movie, it'll turn out to be true. The nerds are definitely going to try to kill us. So Dr. Dan and Ellie, they team up. They're like, we're going to figure this out. They go to her dad's store. He manages a store, I guess. And we get a clue as to what was going on by looking at dad's log of activities. Take a listen.
The question is, why would anybody want to kill Papa? He was a wonderful man. I've been doing some detective work. My father kept excellent records. October 18th, Merchants Council meeting. He was there. I checked. October 19th, football game. He was there, too. October 20th, pick up more masks.
Yeah. That's the kind your father had in his hand.
October 21st, dinner with Minnie. Minnie Blankenship. He never showed up. He never called.
You've been busy.
I think my father ran into trouble somewhere between here and Santa Mira.
Santa Mira?
Where they make those.
Oh.
Little place, not too far away. Maybe they know something. not going back to L.A. until I find out what happened to my father.
Linda, I can't get out of it. I'm really sorry. Nah, just a bunch of doctors talking about boring stuff. Linda, take it easy. I'll be back to take them trick-or-treating, I promise. I'll call... No, I can't remember the name of the hotel. I'll call you Monday. I gotta go. Bye.
So they get some clues. They're going to move along. We find out Dad's store got shut down by those fancy 80s malls. Man, those 80s malls were lit back in the day. Anyhow, Dad got in trouble in Santa Mira where he went to go pick up these masks. So Dr. Dan's like, yeah, baby, let's go to Santa Mira. He lies to his ex-wife about what he's got to do because he's like, I'm not picking up these damn kids. I'll do literally anything but watch these kids. Anything includes hang out with this hot chick and go figure out how her dad died. And he's got and to go on this trip, he's got a six pack. He's at the payphone, and that's all he's got. He's like, "This is all I need. I need some booze, and I need some young tail." I don't know. I sound like an old boomer. Some young tail. Because I'm trying to keep it PG here. And maybe some rubbers. Maybe I'll pick up some rubbers. So, Ellie and Dr. Dan, they head to Santa Mira. This factory, it's out in the middle of nowhere. And all we know is that there's this wealthy Irishman named Connell Cochran who basically built this entire little Irish town. He imported a bunch of Irish people, and he makes these silver shamrock masks. It's actually a cool little town. It's got cool names like the Dublin Inn and the Shamrock Savings and Rafferty's Gas. Pretty fun. But it's also got surveillance cameras. This podunk little town with nobody in it. It's got these surveillance cameras. So Dr. Dan and Ellie, they decide to check in at the motel at the Rose of Shannon. And Dr. Dan, he sneaks in to look at the ledger while Ellie distracts the owner. And he sees that Ellie's dad, the guy who died with the mask, Harry Grimbridge, did in fact check into this motel. So, okay, all right. The clues are checking out. Connell Cochran drives by in his limo. The motel owner, he's going on and on about how great he is, just glazing the guy. And he kind of even snaps to attention. So we already know something's up. Then pulls in Buddy Kupfer and his wife Betty in their RV. Picture the exact same characters as you saw in Christmas Vacation with Cousin Eddie. All right? And there's another bonus Twin Peaks reference, by the way. Angelo Baldamenti, who did the soundtrack for Twin Peaks. I want to say he did the soundtrack for Christmas Vacation as well. He did Nightmare on Elm Street 3, and I want to say Christmas Vacation. So anyway, they get into their room. Dr. Dan, he's setting up for sexy time. He knows what's up. She knows what's up. They know what's up. But anyway, he's setting up, and she's like trying to go. She's going on and on talking about how her dad died, and he's like, hold up. I need a drink. Take a listen to this.
I saw Cochran, his car anyway.
And your old man stayed here on the 20th.
I was right. We'll go directly to the factory. Hold on.
It's getting late. I could use a drink. Let's take our time.
It's okay with you? To stay, I mean.
I think these, clothes could probably hold out for at least one more day. Maybe I had to get another room.
That would look sort of suspicious, wouldn't it?
What I mean is, if you'd feel more comfortable, I could sleep in the car. Be better on this floor, anyway.
Where do you want to sleep, Dr. Chalice?
That's a dumb question, Miss Grimbridge.
And I looked at that Angelo Baldamenti. He did, in fact, do the score for Christmas Vacation. So there you go. So anyways, Dr. Dan, he's trying to booze up and throw down, if you know what I'm saying. He's like, oh, it's getting late. It's 2 p.m., dude. The sun is shining. And to be fair to him, to Dr. Dan, he did offer to sleep in the car. And Ellie was the one being very assertive. I mean, who could resist Dr. Dan? Give me a break. Look at that mustache. That mustache and that members only jacket. Impervious to any kind of women. I don't know. Is that the right term? Anyway, then the next scene, we hear it's 6 p.m. and it's curfew and everyone needs to lock their doors. Very dystopian. And a curfew at 6 p.m. is pretty wild, right? Now, fun fact, the voice of the curfew announcer is Jamie Lee Curtis. She later also plays an operator on the phone. Very fun. Very fun fact. So the surveillance cameras, they're snooping around. They're looking for movement in the town because it's curfew. Everyone should be in. But Dr. Dan's not. He's not obeying the curfew. He's going out to pick up a bottle of booze, of liquor. And a homeless guy jumps out from the alley and tells Dr. Dan, he's like, oh, that bottle's looking a little heavy. And he tells Dr. Dan, he's like, look, I promise you, this homeless man says, I promise you, I've got no diseases. Can I have a drink of your liquor bottle? And Dr. Dan, a medical doctor, tells the homeless man that just jumped out of the trash, go for it. And the homeless guy proceeds to drink straight, lips straight on the bottle, and hands it back to Dr. Dan, the medical doctor. Dr. Dan's like, I'm still drinking this booze. He unfazed entirely. I mean, I don't know where Dr. Dan's mouth's been. It sounds like he ain't scared of nothing. So this homeless guy breaks down the history of the whole town and Connell Cochran and how Connell Cochran put all these outsiders into the town and he ruined it with his surveillance and all this stuff. Take a listen.
Whoa, jeez.
Mister, didn't mean to scare you. Just saw that bottle. Thought it looked pretty heavy. I ain't got no diseases. You mind if I have a drink?
God damn. Thank you.
Hey, just a second. You happen to know anything about this Cochran?
Do I know anything?
He made Santa Maria what it is today. Dried up little pile of nothing. Let me tell you something, mister. He brought in every damn one of them factory people for me outside. You think he'd hire me, local boy? No way. Turn me down flat. If you haven't got a dollar, you can spare it, eh? Thank you. All I can tell you, mister, is watch out. You seen the TV cameras yet? He's watching you, friend, I guarantee you that. Hey, Cochran! Fuck you!
Ooh, shh, easy, easy.
It's all right, don't matter to me. He's probably listening. If he is, I got one thing to say. It's the last Halloween for that lousy factory of his. Pretty wild shit going on in there. I heard rumors.
Like what? What'd you hear?
This year, I'm gonna get me about a case and a half of Molotov cocktails. Burn that son of a bitch right now. Last Halloween for them. Last Halloween.
He's heard rumors of that damn factory of his. So the homeless guy, he's walking around. After this, he's walking around by himself, tugging off of a different bottle, unless Dr. Dan gave him that bottle, which I would give him his medical license back if that's what he did. He was just like, look, just keep it. But that's not what happens, because later Dr. Dan shows up with the bottle. Anyhow, he's swigging from a bottle, and the suits show up, and they literally pull his head off with their bare hands. Oh, dear, the gore. Then we get back to the motel. And a woman named Marge Gutman from San Francisco stops Ellie to complain about... She's like, oh, I got to pick up orders at this mask factory. My son had a mask and the emblem fell right off. Look at this, right? So Marge goes into her room. She cozies up with a little bed and book. Sounds good. Meanwhile, Dr. Dan in the next room is getting ready to pipe down Ellie again. This time, she packs some lingerie. Oh, snap. So they went on this road trip with one little teeny tiny bag because the motel owner, when he takes it out of their truck, is like, wow, you guys pack light. And she packed lingerie and he brought a six pack of booze. I mean, I don't know if this is a real storyline or some smut or what, but I'm here for it. Okay. No wonder I've got problems. I loved this movie as a kid. Anyway, she packs lingerie. They make it happen. And afterwards, she's ready to go again. And Dr. Dan, who, according to my math, has already piped down twice so far, asks her, he's like, how old are you? And she says, I'm older than I look. And Dr. Dan, a medical doctor, is like, good enough for me. Let's do it. And he goes for number three. Now, mind you, in Tom Atkins' actual wife is next door, Marge, playing the character of Marge, while he's dropping the hammer. So Marge's next door. She notices that the Silver Shamrock mask logo, the little piece that fell off the mask, the whole reason she's in town, has a little computer chip on the back. So she takes a bobby pin from her hair and starts, I don't know, stabbing it into the circuitry like she's rewiring it. And it zaps her in the mouth. And it's a classic scene. Her face starts getting wrecked and bugs start crawling out of it. Total gore fest. Ellie even hears the commotion next door. She's like, what's that? And Dr. Dan, who is busy, he said, who cares, baby? So, a couple hours later, ambulance pulls up. A bunch of the suits pull up, acting like they're ambulance people. They take Marge's body out. Dr. Dan tries to pull the, hey, I'm a doctor, what's going on here? But they won't allow it. They're like, no. Mr. Cochran pulls up, assures everyone, hey, it's a small accident. We're going to take care of her at the factory. Everything's fine. And we overhear the suits whisper to Cochran it was a misfire. But Dr. Dan overheard it too. And now they're real curious, right? And they decide to take a little nap. So they go to sleep. I mean, they've been busy. They're exhausted. Saturday, October 30th. The coroner tells Dr. Dan, like, look, the ashes, we've sifted through them. There's no teeth. There's no body parts. Just a bunch of car parts. Right? Remember, they're looking at the body of the suit that lit himself on fire in the car. Dr. Dan's like, tells the coroner, I need you to look up Connell Cochran and tell me about this guy. And she says, you know, this is before the internet and smartphones. And she says, I'll do it, but it's going to cost you some dinners when you get back. Dr. Dan, slow down, buddy. So Ellie and Dr. Dan, they go to the mask place and they find out that Ellie's dad picked up an order of masks and headed north. Not very helpful. But meanwhile, Buddy Kupfer and family show up, Cousin Eddie here, to see Mr. Cochran. Because it turns out Buddy's been the biggest salesman of these masks. So Connell Cochran is going to take him on a personalized tour of the factory. And they ask Dr. Dan and Ellie if they want to go along. And they're like, sure. And they're like, what's your name? And they have the greatest cover. They say, Mr. and Mrs. Smith. Flawless. And during the tour, we find out that Connell Cochran was a big prankster. He was a toy maker. Now, this reminded me of a movie we reviewed back in November of 2019 called Necromancy. It's a film from 1972. It has Orson Welles in it. He's playing this toy company guy as well. And he's got an evil little creepy town called Lilith with a cult in it as well. Very similar. And fun fact, Michael Ontkean plays the main character in that movie, in Necromancy. Plays Frank, who, of course, is our beloved Sheriff Harry Truman in Twin Peaks. So they tour the factory. It culminates with a talk about this thing called the final process. Cochran's like, I can't show you that part, though. All right, cool. Ellie, she sees her father's car at the factory, but there's some suits guarding it. Now she's tripping. She's like, oh, something's up. They're in a hurry to leave. Dr. Dan's like, I'm going to call the police, but the phone lines don't work. And by the time they walk back to the motel room to get Ellie, or by the time Dr. Dan goes to the room, Ellie's gone. Bunch of suits break into the room. They're chasing after him, whatever, whatever. Dr. Dan heads to the factory. He breaks in, sees this old woman knitting in a chair, very creepy. Her head falls off. It's a robot. What? What? Not the robots. A suit finds him, grabs him, tosses him around. Dr. Dan's throwing punches. This dude, this suit guy, he's unfazed. Dan connects real good and ends up with a handful of gooey guts. Gooey guts. What's that about? What's up with the gooey guts? Finally, Cochran shows up, and he's like, I know you ain't Mr. Smith. I know you're Dr. Dan Challis. This is not good. Then we get the final act. Sunday, October 3rd, Halloween. Halloween. Cochran confirms that all these suits, they're just robots. They're androids. And he takes Dr. Dan to the final processing, where he tells him they have an ancient and advanced technology, and it's basically a giant nerd computer lab with a massive stone in it. It's a missing piece of Stonehenge referenced at the beginning of the movie. My God. And we hear Connell Cochran's big reveal, big speech about Stonehenge. Take a listen.
An ancient sacrificial circle. Stonehenge. We had a time getting it here. You wouldn't believe how we did it. It has a power in it. A force. Even a particle. Devastated. Well, Doctor, you asked about the girl.
Where is she?
Right in there. Your friend, Miss Guttman. You killed her. Oh, no, Miss Guttman was the victim of a misfire. The others... What you really need to see is a demonstration, and there's one coming right up.
Goodness. And there's 30 minutes left. You're probably thinking, 30 minutes left? What are we going to do for 30 minutes? That's what I think too. Anyways, the stone, they believe, has a force in it, and they embed a bit of that force into the Silver Shamrock logo. That's why Marge got blasted with that misfire light beam right in her mouth. So Cochran has Ellie strapped to a table, got Dr. Dan strapped in, and Cochran's going to show Dr. Dan a demonstration in a mock-up room, where Buddy Kupfer and family shows up. They're playing the Silver Shamrock commercial. Buddy's like, I got to watch this commercial. The boss wants me to analyze this ad. It tells the kids to put the mask on and watch the commercial. So little Buddy puts the mask on, and it starts tearing him up. Starts tearing him up, turning him into bugs and snakes crawling out of his mouth. Dr. Dan, he looks like he's about to faint. He can't stand this. So the bugs start crawling out of Junior's mouth and kills the whole family. Kupfer family dead. So what we're getting at is that all the big cities in America full of kids wearing these masks for Halloween. They're all going to be brought around the TV at the for the big giveaway, and they're all going to have snakes crawling out of their face. Bugs. They're going to get the Stonehenge bug treatment. So meanwhile, the coroner, she's still trying to figure out this blown up dude, why is a bunch of car parts? Now we know. And in sneaks in a bunch of android suits, and one of the suits grabs a cordless drill. Uh-oh. And it's chucked up with a nice little 3/8 inch bit. Cobalt bit. So you know where that's going? It's going in her head. All right. This is why Nigel Neal walked away. He was like, I'm not doing this. So the suit grabs the cordless. And that's exactly what happens. Diabolical activity. Torture porn, dare you. But fret not, they actually don't show it. So thank God for that. I don't want to see that either. So the colonel, she's at no dinners with Dr. Dan next week. Take that off the calendar. So Cochran's got Dr. Dan strapped into a chair, and now he gives him the big speech. Take a listen.
Enjoy the horror-thon, Doctor. And don't forget to watch the big giveaway afterwards. Why, Cochran? Why? Do I need a reason? Mr. Kupfer was right, you know. I do love a good joke, and this is the best ever, a joke on the children. But there's a better reason. You don't really know much about Halloween. You thought no further than the strange custom of having your children wear masks and go out begging for candy. It was the start of the year in our old Celtic lands, and we'd be waiting in our houses of wattles and clay. The barriers would be down, you see, between the real and the unreal. And the dead might be looking in to sit by our fires of turf. Halloween. The festival of Samhain. The last great one took place 3,000 years ago, and the hills ran red with the blood of animals and children. Sacrifices. Part of our world. Our craft.
Witchcraft.
To us, it was a way of controlling our environment. It's not so different now. It's time again. In the end, we don't decide these things, you know. The planets do. They're in alignment, and it's time again. The world's going to change tonight, Doctor. I'm glad you'll be able to watch it. And happy Halloween.
This Cochran guy really hates the kids. He hates kids, but he loves a good joke, ironically. And we hear about the real history of Halloween and wearing masks, and it's about the Celtic lands of Ireland, which is where he's from, the motherland for Santa Mira, about the dead roaming around during Samhain. Proper pronunciation by Conal Cochran, by the way. I think Dr. Loomis drops the ball on the pronunciation in Halloween too, if I'm not mistaken. But they talk about blood sacrifices, witchcraft, controlling the environment. And what's telling, that's the big tell, is Connell says, it's not so different now. The elites know that this is really happening. I think this is a reference to Bohemian Grove. They're in Northern California. Why not? They do the big cremation of care ritual, burning a child sacrifice in effigy. And he also talks about the planets being in alignment, again taking us back to the occult foundations of astrology. He turns on the TV for Dr. Dan, that's nice of him, and John Carpenter's Halloween yet again. You hear the music starting up, right? And he slaps a mask on Dr. Dan, and he's being monitored by android nerds in the lab. Dr. Dan scrolls the chair over to the TV, breaks it with his feet, cuts himself loose with the shard of the TV. That's some intense TV screen. Tosses his mask over the surveillance camera so that they can't see him. Genius work. That's why my man's a sex magnet. I mean, imagine how fast he would have gotten out of that trap if there was some booze or chicks waiting for him in the next room. Twice as fast. Now, fun fact, this was actually an homage to Halloween 1. Because at the beginning of Halloween 1, Michael Myers as a child, you see the point of view camera as he kills his sister. So Dr. Dan, he breaks loose, he crawls through the ducting, gets out of the factory. Android nerds realize, oh my god, what happened to this dude? Where'd he go? Then he goes back in the factory looking for Ellie. And now we got a chase. Dr. Dan and Ellie they even do the classic trick of hiding behind like a rolling rack so you can't see him. Very Scooby-Doo, right? So Dr. Dan sneaks up to one of the consoles that these nerds are working on. It's got no less than 200 buttons on it. And with no differentiating, they're all just buttons. And he hits three random buttons and starts the commercial up. Starts the big giveaway to watch the Magic Pumpkin. And apparently it's too early. The nerds are freaking out. And he gets up high and dumps a box of these Silver Shamrock Electrical Stonehenge circuit chips on top of the nerds' heads. And it kills all of them. So now the only one they got to deal with is Cochran. And the nerds somehow create a circular force field. And Cochran is standing between it and the Stonehenge rock. And these two end up connecting and it zaps Cochran into oblivion. The whole factory blows up. The nerd lab blows up. And the force field reminded me of Late Night with the Devil. If you heard my analysis of that one. And Dr. Dan and Ellie escape. They get in their little car, flip on the radio to hear the commercial talking about how, oh, hey kids, hurry home for the giveaway commercial. So apparently it's still on. And out of nowhere, Ellie grabs Dr. Dan by his mouth, starts squeezing him until he wrecks the car. But guess what? She's an android nerd now. He busts her head off with a tire iron. What a night. My God. But wait, there's more. Her severed android arm is still in the car, and it grabs him by the neck. So he tosses that off. Ugh. Okay, wow, what a night. But wait, there's more. Her headless, armless body gets up and attacks him again. But it runs out of steam, crashes out. Wow, what a night. Now, the implication here, I think, is that Cochran turned her into an android. The book, because there's a novelization of this movie, and the book describes it in a way that seems like that's what really happened, because you're probably thinking, was she a robot the whole time? I don't know, but in the book it says, he touched her fingers, still cold, he thought. All those drugs Cochran must have shot her up with, her metabolism so low, her skin's like ice. So I think Cochran turned her into an android nerd. So Dr. Dan, he starts a full-on sprint back to the gas station where this all began. Kind of a replay of the first part of the movie. He gets on the phone, he calls the police, I guess, trying to get the commercial to stop playing, but nobody believes him. And then the commercial pauses with technical difficulties because he's kind of watching a TV at the gas station at the same time. So they shut it down off of the first two channels, but there's still the third channel. And he's like, stop it. Stop it. Stop that third channel from playing it. And that's how the movie ends. Apparently, the commercial goes through and millions of kids die wearing their Halloween masks. Because, you know, back in the day, there was only three channels. You know, you had over-the-air antenna. There's three channels. Cable was a premium. Most people, we didn't have cable growing up. We did later, but, you know, I remember the life of free over-the-air TV. So, in conclusion, one of my favorite Halloween movies out there. One of my favorite films of all time. But I would also understand if someone watched this for the first time in 2024 and was like, this is trash. It's corny. Yeah, it kind of is. But it's real fun. You know? It's got some negative reviews, but now it's a cult classic. I was looking up a New York Times. I guess Roger Ebert said this is one of the worst films of all time. A New York Times review said, Halloween 3 manages the not-so-easy feat of being anti-children, anti-capitalism, anti-television, and anti-Irish all at the same time. Seems genius to me. The ending was called very nihilist, which, you know, I mean, millions of kids dying. Not too cheery. But let's talk about the plot. Very occulted. It's not a huge part of the movie. They mention it a few times, but it's a perfect example of occult beliefs in entertainment and the elites, possibly Bohemian Grove, wanting to reinstill the ancient ways. Something I talk about in all my books. Cochran wants to have Halloween be as devious and sacrificey as his Celtic druidic ancestors from Ireland. This is what they want, I think. Samhain is something we've talked about every Halloween special. Every year I do a Halloween, either a movie analysis or a special or something. And the one year I did the Halloween 2 breakdown of the film Halloween 2. And Samhain is discussed by Dr. Loomis, if you recall. And the name Samhain comes from James Frazier's Golden Bough, the annual ritual going back to Ireland. Very apropos for the movie. They kindle a sacred flame, and there's talk about human sacrifices. And the Druids allegedly did this. The Irish believed in Fomorians, who were these malevolent spirits who would come out during Samhain. And they'd, like, you know, wreck all the crops and the milk and all this stuff. So they would do blood sacrifices to prevent that from happening, is the theory. But again, if you want more, go to my October 2023 episode of Halloween 2, where we talk about this, the worst doc. Worse than Dr. Dan is Dr. Loomis. Terrible doctor. If you want more on that. Now, what's interesting is that the story takes place on the TV. It's very meta, right? Like how they're watching John Carpenter's Halloween inside the movie. And the kids all get blood sacrificed through the TV. And I discussed this in the second Alien book, Aliens, UFOs, and the Occult, Use Your Illusion 2. Use Your Illusion, let it take you where it may. The TV plants images and messages that can manifest into reality. That's the theory. I provide all the basis for that in the book. A neuroscientist named Dr. Jeffrey Zaks talks about these cognitive models that we build. And I argue that if you combine that with the ideas of occult magic, that maybe that's true. Finally, the Twin Peaks crossover conspiracy. The Halloween 3 Season of the Witch book novelization written by Jack Davis, which is a pseudonym for Dennis Etchison. I don't have it, right? It's I've wanted it for a while. It's like $80 on eBay and stuff. But I found on the archive website, you can actually read it right there, which is fun. On Wikipedia, this is what it claims on Wikipedia. It says, although Cochran appears to die in the film, the novelization implies that he may have survived with the magic of Stonehenge transporting him away. While the film leaves open the question of whether Chalice was able to get the Third Network to pull the deadly Silver Shamrock ad, the book conclusively states that he failed as the children die screaming. Now, I don't know where Wikipedia got that information. Because I think in the book it suggests that Cochran does die. I think so. I'm going to read you from the book. The lightning passed through Cochran's chest, skewering him as he stood there in the center of a white fireball brighter than the sun. He began to glow with an unbearable brilliance, impaled in the eye of an energy cyclone. Now, let's be fun, though. Let's pretend he doesn't die, okay? So in 1982... the guy who plays Connell Cochran doesn't die. Maybe he relocates just north a little bit more into the town of Twin Peaks as a man named Andrew Packard. Now, granted, all this would violate Mark Frost's Secret History of Twin Peaks book, but hey, we're going to have a fun little Halloween theory. And I'm going to give a Twin Peaks season 2 spoiler here in the next 5 seconds, so if you're very sensitive to it, please fast forward. In Twin Peaks, Andrew Packard owns the sawmill after inheriting it in 1948 and then he fakes his death in 1987, and then shows it back up in 1989. But you can see how he faked his death once already. Why not twice? Why not in 1982? In the big Silver Shamrock factory meltdown. And in fact, the Twin Peaks fandom website doesn't even show a history between 1948 and 1983. So it's possible that he went to Santa Mira. Or maybe he just traveled there for work. Who knows? He's always been wealthy. He's always been a businessman. So it kind of makes sense, right? On the Twin Peaks fandom page, it says, in 1948, Packard took control of the Packard Sawmill. And then the next sentence, in 1983, so right after 1982, in 1983, he met Josette Mai Wong at a state-sponsored black tie mixer at the Hong Kong Trade Center and brought her to his hometown of Twin Peaks, where she accepted his proposal of marriage. Now, why would he fake his own death? Well, he was a Freemason. Andrew Packard was a Freemason. And they know the strategies like Machiavelli faking one's own death. But more importantly, if you recall in season two, we talked about this mysterious black box left behind that had this puzzle of astrological alignments on the top of it, which is just like we hear about in Halloween 3. That's right. And again, like, it doesn't really fit because Andrew Packard is trying to open the box. I'm not sure he's the guy who built it, but Packard is the guy who ends up opening the box. So there's that. And in the history of Andrew Packard, we know that as a Boy Scout, he stumbled upon Glastonbury Grove and had some supernatural experiences, which would definitely make him believe in Stonehenge having magical powers that he could use. As an adult, of course, in 1982. And if you're caught up in my Twin Peaks Grey Lodge series, you already know I've been dropping tons of connections to King Arthur, primarily through Glastonbury Grove. And if you recall in Geoffrey Monmouth's History of the Kings of Britain, Stonehenge is mythically believed to have been built when the magician Merlin moved stones from Ireland. And these stones, he moved them with magic. Prior to that, giants moved these stones from Africa to Ireland. Anyway, Merlin moved these stones. And they were considered healing stones back then. So not the kind that turns kids into bugs and snakes. So arguably, Andrew Packard would have used black magic to change how this power of Stonehenge is used. And he would have got knowledge about all this when he stumbled upon Glastonbury Grove as a Boy Scout. And we don't know his history between that and 1983, unless we fill in the blanks and say in 1982 he was in Santa Mira. Huh? What do you think of that? Is that fun or what? What a fun little Halloween experience that was this year. Thank you for joining me on this Halloween journey. Halloween 3, Season of the Witch, one of the classics. I'm glad we finally got around to doing it. And you're probably asking yourself, well, Isaac, you did Halloween 1, you did Halloween 2, now you did Halloween 3. Does that mean next year you're going to do Halloween 4? And the answer is no. I actually hate all the rest of the Halloween movies. They're trash. It wasn't until Rob Zombie picked it up and did it right for, I think, his Halloween movies. I don't even hate the new trilogy, the, what is it? I don't even know what it's called. Halloween Kills, Halloween Ends. Halloween Ends sucked. But the first two of the new trilogy, they're pretty good too. But the Halloween 4, 5, 6, oh, they're trash. Terrible movies. So no, I won't be doing those again. I don't know what I'm going to do next year. Something fun for Halloween. I don't know what it is. But I want to thank you for joining me on this journey. I'll put links in the show notes of many other episodes where you can go deeper into a lot of these topics. And, you know, I'm still petitioning for you guys to leave some 5-star reviews to counter the 1-star haters. I've seen a couple of them come through. Thank you very much. I appreciate that. That's how you can keep this show happy and alive, because it's not going to happen through YouTube. I'm in a real bind here with the video version of the show. Oh, you can put it on Rumble. Yeah, no one's on Rumble. Oh, put it on Rockfin. Yeah, no one's watching it on Rockfin, you know? So stay tuned for updates to the show. I mean, I'm for sure going to always be podcasting, but do I do the video version? It adds an incredible amount of resources, expenses, and time. I don't know. We'll see. For sure, I'm going to keep it going till we finish Twin Peaks Grey Lodge, because at this point, I've got all these videos. But in the future, I'm not sure what it looks like. Rumble sucks. Rockfin's not working out for me. YouTube banned me. Vimeo banned me. I don't know how many options I got left. So anyway, if you want to support the show, leave a 5-star review. Okay? Thank you for your time. Thanks for listening. Stay positive.